Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I'm Sam Keir, host of Hitman for Hire, a year in the life of a franchise cricketer. For the past 12 months, I've been talking to T20 star David Visa, getting his take from behind the scenes at the IPL, the 100 and the rest of the world's biggest leagues.
That's the don't nearly view system deal. There's no ways in my mind that was up.
These guys don't know how to win at this stage.
He had his driver pick him up in his Bentley.
People start chanting your name. You kind of have to pinch yourself.
Hitman for Hire, a year in the life of a franchise cricketer. Listen now, wherever you get your podcasts.
Sport Social. Daily Premier League news and views. This is Football Social Daily.
This is Football Social Daily, the Premier League podcast with a new episode every single day of the season. There are three Premier League fixtures tonight: Watford against Crystal Palace, Burnley against Tottenham, and Liverpool against Leeds United. But we're going to save those and put them in the bank for tomorrow's Football Social Daily, because tonight some of our clubs are in European action, and it's the Champions League, the elite club competition. Manchester United are in Madrid to face Simeone's Atletico in the last 16. Ronaldo back in his former hometown against an old enemy. Chelsea are defending champions. They took a huge stride to the quarterfinals with victory over Lille last night, and they did it without Lukaku, who apparently was tired, says gaffer Thomas Tuchel. But does that tell the whole story? We'll discuss both of those games on today's episode of the show. Hit subscribe now, and that way you won't miss another show again. I'm Niall, and today in the studio, alongside me, Joel Tudor and Marley Anderson. Good morning, boys.
Good morning.
Good morning.
You looking forward to the Champions League tonight, Joel?
The champion. I love it. You can't beat a big European night. And I'm kind of just savouring it, because I'm thinking that we're not going to get there next year. So I'm just going to really just take everything in.
I don't blame you, because you could end up like Marley, who's a Newcastle fan, who remembers the heady days of the Toon Army in the Champions League. What was that, 20 years ago?
Yeah, like 2002, 3, 4, 5. I think we got in it one of them years. Hey, if you're Sinchul Rami Obi score at the Nou Camp, your life's complete, to be honest. Running a young Carles Puyol ragged.
Didn't Tino Asprilla score a hat-trick against Barcelona?
He did, yes. At St James's, he scored a header and I think two penalties in a game, which is the reason why he's a legend at Newcastle, to be honest. But yeah, all nostalgia for now, until Dan Byrne leads us to the Champions League in 2025.
Well, we'll have to wait and see. Of course, Premier League action taking place this weekend. We'll talk about that slightly later on in the week. But for now, European action takes centre stage, and it is a big one tonight in Madrid. Manchester United on their travels to play Atletico. We'll talk about that game shortly. But first, let's discuss the game that's already taken place. It happened last night at Stamford Bridge, and Chelsea beat the French side Lille by 2-0, and that puts them in a real good position when it comes to qualification for the quarterfinals. Kai Havertz was the man who scored the opening goal. He's fast becoming Chelsea's go-to guy in the big games, isn't he, Marley? He scored in the Champions League final last season. He scored in the Club World Cup final from the penalty spot. He seems to be the man when it comes to those big occasions for the Blues.
He does, yeah. Someone's got to be, because the 100 million striker sat on the bench feeling tired. You know, he had a tough game at the weekend, making just 7 touches, and decided he was too tired to play, or Tuchel decided he was too tired to play, but... yeah, as long as someone's coming up with him for Chelsea. They've got a lot of talent in that, obviously, attacking area in particular. But as long as someone chips in with the goals, then they're still a really hard team to beat. So I'm still not convinced about Havertz as a striker, to be honest. I think he's better sort of in a more of a freer role, where he can drift around and arrive late into the box and cause problems with his height and movement and stuff like that. But he did well last night. I think he'd had 3 shots on target in the first 10 minutes, and one of them was his goal. Another one was a decent save from the keeper, and one was a tap-in he should have scored, to be fair, but he was stretching and put it over the bar. But he's that goal threat at the minute, and he's the in-form man. So if you look at that, you say, like, if Lukaku's going to continue, you know, feeling sorry for himself and turning in terrible performances, you don't need him as much, and he didn't even come off the bench last night. So fair enough, Chelsea played well without him, and that'll give him confidence as well, because the likes of Pulisic, he's almost forgotten about Pulisic because he's had so many injuries, but
yeah,
he's still quality, he's still got, you know, his best years ahead of him and everything like that. So you've still got him, you've still got Havertz, you've still got Mount, Hudson-Odoi, Werner's not done, Lukaku could still pull this back if he fancies it. And yeah, Chelsea were good last night.
Talking of Christian Pulisic, let's come on to him now before we do inevitably mention Romelu Lukaku. He scored the other goal, bit of a questionable celebration. I don't know whether I'm getting on a bit, Joel. What was it called, the celebration that Pulisic did?
Let's go to our young guy in the room. Let's talk, who's looking very confused at the minute.
What was the celebration? It's got a name, hasn't it?
I don't know, because BT Sport said, what do we think about his... And then they named the celebration.
Because there's the Millie Rock, which is the one that Lingard used to do, isn't it?
It's a new one, but it was kind of cringe to me.
I can't remember what it is. Whilst Marley Googles it, I'll ask you about Pulisic. You know, like I say, and like Marley says, he's a quality forward, Christian Pulisic, when he's fit. And that has been the issue with his time at Chelsea so far, is he's shown exactly what he's capable of, as he did last night by scoring against Lille in the Champions League. But his fitness issues have cropped up now and again. If Chelsea can keep him fit, they do have a really good player there, don't they?
Yeah, I remember, I don't know if it was in his first season, his first full season when he played in, I can't remember, it might have been the goal against potentially City or one of the big sides where he kind of mazed through. It was almost like Eden Hazard-esque. And after that, I was thinking, my God, they've got an absolute player on the hands if they can keep him fit. And that's been the big problem, isn't it? If he can stay fit. He has a lot of hamstring injuries and his play is pretty much predominantly on him having short bursts and quick feet. And that's the only issue. Literally the fact that his career is stalled now just because he cannot stay fit in that Chelsea side. And with how high-level modern football is at the moment, if you're out of form or you're injured for a good 2-3 months, suddenly someone takes your place and it's hard for you to even get back into the side again. And it must be tough for him, because at Dortmund he was pretty consistently playing constantly, which is why he ended up getting that move to Chelsea. But this is what I mean. It's a tough one, because he's a bit of a flash in the pan where he gets consistency in games and then he'll be out for another month. And maybe Tuchel feels he can't rely on him just because he consistently gets injuries. But when he does play, he does make such a difference, because he's got a very unique play style. He does remind me a lot of Hazard, not in terms of technical ability, but the way he can just manoeuvre himself around players consistently, because he's just like got such a low centre of gravity. But again, his injuries are going to impact that, because he's a very explosive type of player. And when you're out of the team for a good amount of time, other players in the side are going to start taking your place, aren't they? But for 60 million, which is a big ton of money for someone who's constantly out, Chelsea don't seem to have massive luck with the big money signings at the moment, as we'll probably get onto Lukaku as well. But It's good signs, but again, the opposition is Lille. They're not the most amazing team right now. But yeah, hopefully for him, he can stay fit, because he's a great player when he can stay fit.
Yeah, you'd back Chelsea to have beaten Lille, even in the absence of Lukaku. Marley, have you managed to figure out what that celebration was called yet?
Yeah, I have. It's called the Griddy.
The Griddy, that was the Griddy. One.
It's that one where it's like going there.
Yeah. Yeah, so I've
I
also...
just need to get my pipe and slippers, because I feel extremely old right now. Trying
so
to
do I. But, mate, I've just Googled what is a Griddy. And
just show you a grid on the
what
road.
Is a Griddy dance? I had to Google it again, because people were saying it was a power grid. I'm like, no, it's not. Yeah, the short version is, it comes from an American football thing where... Alan Davis, who was a wide receiver friend of Jamar Chase, who's a big NFL star, and he wanted to create his own dance, so he created it, and then it just took off, and that was it.
Oh,
and
thanks.
Everyone's copying it now, because that's life. You do something and then copy it, that's it.
An American sports culture lesson there from Marley Anderson on Football Social Daily. I know we do have a decent American contingent that listens in to this show, so... I really do apologise for not knowing what a Griddy is, but your American star, Christian Pulisic, scoring Chelsea's goal last night to make it 2-0 against Lille. Now let's address the elephant in the room. Romelu Lukaku didn't come on, even though Chelsea have put one foot in the quarterfinals of the UEFA Champions League. The narrative after this game is all about Lukaku, Marley. You mentioned it earlier. Thomas Tuchel said that he was fatigued and that's why he didn't play. He was on the bench, but he didn't come on. It's a weird one to say that your star striker who cost £95 million is fatigued when he only took 7 touches in the Premier League game against Crystal Palace at the weekend, which is the fewest that's ever been recorded since they started taking stats. 7 touches is very, very poor for a striker. Yeah. What's going on with Lukaku? What have you noticed from the outside? What do you think the problems are?
I don't know really, because we talked about this on yesterday's podcast a little bit and just said, like, you know, in my opinion, he's got everything. Like, he's got everything he needs to go and be successful. He's got the belief from the club to go and pay that type of fee for him. He's got experience of the league.
Yeah.
He's got the physical attributes. He's got the technical attributes to score goals.
He's at peak age as well.
Exactly. Yeah, what is he, 28?
27, 28.
There
yeah.
you go. That's, you know, it's huge. He's got 108 Premier League goals. I think he's got 118 maybe. So he's got absolutely everything. He speaks a language. He knows the club. You know, he's got absolutely everything. And then something's went wrong. Somebody said something maybe that's wound him up one day, and he's took a huff. And it's like, then he gives his interview to the Italian Sky Sports or whoever it was, and it's never been the same since. And it's like, there's no real excuse for it, I don't think, because he can still win this back. It just takes a couple of games, a few goals here and there, and then he goes on a run. And, you know, he becomes the beast we all know he is, like, he can be. And then you see him, like, on the bench last night. He wasn't even used. Like, I know players get tired and stuff like that, and fatigue, and playing 2 games in a week when they've got, I think they've got Liverpool at the weekend as well, so that's obviously maybe a case of resting him. But when he hasn't scored for a few games, and I'm not counting the Club World Cup game against Al Hilal or whoever it was, you know, the way I see it, like, if he's on the bench for the full game against Lille, you have to win that game against Lille. So either you play your best players, or you take a chance on the rest of them doing
it. But, I mean, is that it now? Because Lukaku at the moment isn't one of their best players. And that's just the way it's been, like, for a few months.
How can he not be in the team if everything's okay? Like, if you're playing a knockout game in the Champions League, you play your best team.
Yeah, if everything was going swimmingly, he'd be in the starting 11 for that game, wouldn't he?
Yeah, and even if you don't think you need him, he's on a... Like, if you don't see Lille as a top team, you could use them as practice for Lukaku. Like, you know, play the game, score a goal, get your confidence, go into Liverpool at the weekend with 2 goals in midweek, and you'll be flying. But they didn't even use him, and they didn't need him, but they didn't use him as well. Now he's got to go into the game against Liverpool at the weekend, and Tuchel will probably be thinking, well, Havertz did really well in midweek, so I'm not going to drop him. Pulisic scored, so I'm not going to drop him. The only chance he's got is that Ziyech went off injured, and maybe that brings Lukaku back into it or something like that. But if you're not starting a knockout game in the Champions League against whoever it may be, whether they're brilliant or crap, there's a serious problem there. And then it's just going to hang over them now to the end of the season, unless it gets sorted and quickly, really.
I guess the only other thought on that would be that in that game against Liverpool, if he does start, he kind of has to score. And that might be the...
And we all know about his record against top teams. It's always been there. Yeah. Like I said yesterday, you know, when he was at Man United, he didn't score against a top 6 team, I don't think. So... Yeah, it's a big problem. Big £100 million, 6'3", 16 stone problem.
It certainly is a big problem. One that Thomas Tuchel is dealing with, interestingly enough, in a way in which he could have easily have been laughed at for what he said last night, Tuchel being tired. And Marley's mentioned some of the problems there that he thinks are the issue with Romelu Lukaku. But to be tired after 7 touches, he's just saving face to one of his players, because there's got to be a deeper problem there. You can't say that someone's tired after 7 touches in a game at the weekend.
Yeah, he's protecting him. I think it's been pretty smart from Tuchel, to be honest, because he knows how much ridicule he got after that game. I don't think I've seen a player or a striker, imagine like a £100 million striker, Lukaku, and you're seeing people mention your name like that as if you weren't even on the pitch. I think Tuchel's doing it to, one, keep him out of the firing line because he's protecting him, because he's probably getting so much ridicule and abuse. And two, is the fact that you can't let complacency breed in your side as well, because if you've got a strike on your team and you play him again after such a poor game, what message does that send to the players who are waiting to get back into the team?
Yeah.
Like Havertz, He's probably been waiting to potentially start there or get a bit more of a chance forward, further forward. And then he sees Lukaku drop a disaster class. And he's like, well, how do I get in the side then?
That's management, isn't it? You either have to pick whether to stay with that person and let them redeem themselves, or you kind of show them that you're not willing to accept that sort of performance. Yeah, exactly. I think there's actually a deeper question here when it comes to Chelsea and their centre forwards, because if I think of their strikers in the Premier League era, the two that really stand out for me as being the best, at least since I've watched Chelsea, since the money's come in 2003 from Roman Abramovich, Didier Drogba, undoubtedly their best striker during the era, and probably after that, Diego Costa. But if you think about the other signings they've made, Lukaku for $95 million, they signed Hernan Crespo, who was a really top player at the time, did okay. Andrei Shevchenko, who had won the Ballon d'Or, they signed him. He wasn't really up to much at the time for Chelsea.
Gonzalo Higuain.
Alvaro Morata cost them over £70 million and didn't do it. Is there a problem with Chelsea and signing strikers? Because apart from the aforementioned Drogba and Costa, it feels like any striker that goes into Chelsea, particularly with a big price tag, doesn't seem to perform.
Well, you can't. Well, first of all, you can't really say it's the system or the manager, because they've had about 20 different managers in that time, and they've all got different kind of ways of playing, different systems, different philosophies. But then if you compare the two who have been successful, which is Didier Drogba and Diego Costa, the two things they have in common are, one is that they're very good technically, and two, they're very good physically. And I think with every other player that hasn't been successful, I don't think they've had both of those traits. Because Chelsea usually, regardless of the manager, they've always had that one focal striker.
Yeah.
I don't remember ever them having a partnership, maybe apart from maybe the Hasselbank.
Yeah, I was going to say, apologies to the Chelsea fans for missing out Hasselbank off that list. Costa, Drogba
and
Hasselbank.
And Johnson.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that was 20 years ago.
Yeah, it was 20 years ago. Hasselbank and Johnson. Yeah,
that was a particular
era. Would be the two up front. But I've just Googled here, Chelsea strikers. Lukaku, Drogba, Costa, the first three. Fernando Torres, they paid £50 million for him. Didn't really work out. Olivier Giroud was used in fits and starts. A good goal scorer in the Premier League. But then again, those names that I've mentioned, Shevchenko, Morata, Batshuayi, who I think they've still got. Demba Ba, a player who's okay, but these are not players who have come in and had the desired impact at Chelsea. It seems to happen to them a lot when it comes to
strikers. Is it potentially because every single time Chelsea are probably the only club who always spend a fortune on a striker, and they have instant pressure on them to be the guy who scores the goals. Is that the reason? Because it can't be the system, because they have a different manager every other year, so it's not like it's the same system.
Yeah, that's a good point.
So I think it's potentially the fact that there's so much pressure on you. Like Fernando Torres is the best example, where he was on one of the best seasons I think I've ever seen for a striker in the league. He went for $50 million and he literally was zapped.
Yeah.
I think it's pressure.
With Torres, he rushed back for the World Cup in 2010. Mm. And I think he rushed back from a knee injury and he had lost that kind of
that pace,
half a yard of pace, and he just wasn't the same player. But just on this list here on Google, Falcao, Eto'o, Alex Pato.
I just remembered about Eto'o.
There's so many different
strikers
who have been unbelievable at other clubs but have just not done it at Chelsea. Let's move on from this conversation, Marley, and talk about Chelsea in terms of their European credentials this season. They're obviously defending UEFA Champions League title holders. They weren't the best team in the competition last season, as we've said on the podcast before. They probably weren't the best team in terms of if you were to pick a winner, but they went on and won the competition. So I guess you could say they are the deserved winners. We say that in terms of the teams that are left in the competition, probably City are better, Bayern Munich are better, Liverpool are better, and maybe there are a couple of other arguments for other sides as well. But they win these big games regularly, particularly under Thomas Tuchel. You think about the big Champions League games that they've had, obviously winning the final last year, winning the Club World Cup this time around. Some of the bigger games in the Premier League, they tend to get results from. They do well in these big games, don't they?
Yeah, as a one-off sort of, you've got to go and beat Chelsea. They're not as easy as their league position may sort of suggest. They're still a quality side. If Tuchel settles on a sort of an attacking lineup like we were saying before, they could be, a real problem. But they're always going to be tough because they've got that. That belief of, well, we won the Champions League last year, so even if they didn't think they were the best team in it last year leading up to the final, they went and won it, and that gives you like mad confidence. Like, of course it does, because you won this last year, so you're probably thinking, well, we're better than we were last year. Havertz has had a year in England, so he's going to get better. Lukaku's always still got the potential, if he sorts it out, to be a game changer in any game. So if you think of it in that way, then Chelsea are always going to be hard to beat. Like, they're going to probably beat everybody who, other than the teams you mentioned before, Liverpool, Bayern Munich, Man City, you know, these teams will be right in there and when we get down to sort of the last eight or the last four in particular. But yeah, Chelsea are going to be, you know, very hard to beat. But I mean, they are beatable. But again, like, it's that thing of like, well, we're the champions, and it can just give you a little bit more than you thought you had. So they're always going to be a tough side. So we'll have to see how they end up doing it. But when you've got players like Thiago Silva at the back, who's done everything there possibly is to win a game, in the game, to, you know, in terms of winning things, he's aging like a fine wine. And then you've got quality all over the pitch. You know, you've always got a chance when you've got that type of team.
Yeah, absolutely. And Chelsea take a huge stride towards the Champions League quarterfinals after their last 16 first leg victory at Stamford Bridge. They beat the French side Lille by 2-0. And it's from France to Spain next on Football Social Daily, because that's where Manchester United will be tonight. They're in the Spanish capital to take on Atletico. We'll talk about that after this.
Football Social Daily. Subscribe to the podcast now so you never miss an episode. Social Podcast Network.
This is Pedro from the Arsenal Opinion Podcast, and I am hyped about the title running. Can Arsenal pit Pep and Klopp? Will our young squad be described as mentality monsters? Is Mikel Arteta truly a generational saucy manager? Come and join us on the Arsenal Opinion Podcast to follow the boys on this historic 2024 Premier League title run-in and hear analysis of the games, the hottest transfer rumours, the Arsenal culture and the business of football. 3 times a week exclusively on the Sports Social Podcast Network. Search the Arsenal Opinion now and come and join the fun.
Football's Social Daily. Find more great sport at sport-social.co.uk.
Welcome back. This is Football Social Daily from Sports Social. I'm Niall. I've got Joel Tudor and Marley Anderson with me, and it's time to talk about Manchester United, who are on their travels in the first leg of their last 16 Champions League knockout tie with Atletico Madrid. They're not quite the same side as they were when they won La Liga last season, Atletico. So it could be an interesting matchup tonight against a Manchester United side who are in good form under Ralph Rangnick. Joel, you're a United fan, and the interim boss has suggested that there'll be an emotional and hostile atmosphere inside the Wanda Metropolitano tonight. It's shaping up to be a really good game this evening, I think.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting one. I'm glad it's not at the old Calderon, which seems our way more hostile environment than the new stadium. But even still, I mean, their fans are quite crazy. But it'll be an interesting one, just because United are in probably the better form than they've had probably since the start of the season, I would say. And Atletico Madrid are just not the team that they once were. I think that's the only only factor that gives me confidence going into this, because just judging on how they are at the moment this season, they've already conceded 34 goals in 25 games. And every season under Simeone, they've conceded less than 30 in the whole season. So obviously that shows that they're probably the weakest at the back they've been in probably a decade. Mm-hmm. And for our players who can't seem to hit a barn door half the time, that's music to my ears. And especially Ronaldo, I think he's got something like 25 goals in 15 games against Atletico. So that kind of bodes well for my hopes as well.
How many of them have been for Man United, though?
It's a different thing having Modric, Cruz and Bale around you rather than bloody Fred and McTominay. But I think it's going to be a really interesting encounter. I think it's going to be two teams cancelling each other out. Obviously, I think we know how Atletico are and how they've always played, which is very conservative. They take the pressure, the quick in the counter attacks. Obviously, they got Antoine Griezmann back again.
I mean, if you look at their squad list, Joel, they've got some top players. But if you go back to their last game in La Liga at the weekend, they won 3-0 away at Osasuna. But Osasuna had 63% possession and Atletico had 37. So they are a team that will, you know, kind of frustrate you. They'll let you have the ball. They'll probably block back slightly deeper and make you break them down, which is something over the last 2 years that Manchester United have had a problem with, when teams have sat off and said, come on then, come and beat us, come and break us down. Do you think United, with the form that they're in, have got the ingredients in terms of the top end of the pitch to take it to Atletico, because as you can see by that scoreline from the weekend, I know it's La Liga and it's slightly different calibre of opposition, they can punish you because they've got the players to do it.
Yeah, and I think that's what makes it interesting, just the fact that United have lacked the creativity in the final third against the majority of the teams this season, which has been probably one of the sole reasons why we haven't been able to win a lot of the games. And then obviously Atletico are known to be such a low block side under Simeone. The only difference is that they're a little bit more, like I'd say, expansive, because if you compare their team from a decade ago, we were in the Champions League final against Real Madrid. I mean, they had a 4-4-2 formation, which was just predominantly centre mids, yeah, left backs, and completely defensive minded players. Now they have a little bit more kind of pace, I would say, where they have Antoine Griezmann, Thomas Lamar, Raul de Paul. They have a lot of players
who are a little Felix bit fought.
Yeah,
well.
João Félix is a big, big player for them. So they're a little bit different in terms of their attacking play compared to previously. And obviously, I think a few of these players, like Griezmann's not the player he was a decade ago. Mm. So it's going to be interesting. And especially, you know, obviously, like I mentioned, Ronaldo, amazing record against Madrid. It's not going to be the same record for Manchester United. He's not got the same players around him. He's not the same player anymore.
Yeah.
But it's going to be interesting. I think he's going to be one of the keys to the game.
Yeah.
Just because of the fact that he knows how to play against these kind of he's the big moment player. Mm. And in the Champions League, he's basically kept us in it.
Yeah, it's a great point about Cristiano Ronaldo returning to Madrid, his old stomping ground. Of course, he's a former Real Madrid player, a bona fide UEFA Champions League legend. I think he scored the most goals in the competition's history. How determined will he be tonight, Marley? He's got this moniker of Mr. Champions League. European competition seems to be when Cristiano comes alive against an old enemy in Atletico. He should be bang up for this one, surely.
Yeah, he will be. I think he's, you know, obviously he's wise enough to realise that Man United aren't going to do what they want to do in the league. So he's probably thinking, you know what, on a similar to what I was saying about Chelsea before, over one game, can we find that form and you know, knock Atletico out over the two legs and then see who we get in the next round? And that way you've only got to be sort of at your best for the next, you know, like six more games to get far in the competition and, you know, go on and win it, for example. But obviously it's a big task. Atletico, as Joel was saying, they're not the same team. I think Jan Oblak has been one of the worst goalkeepers in the league this year. His drop-off's been mental. I don't know whether they're just suffering from Kieran Trippier not being a right back thanks to us, but I don't know. But yeah, Oblak's been, I think he's got one of the worst save percentages of any goalkeeper in the league, which is crazy considering he's one of the best goalies in the world, you know, a year ago. So I think looking at them sort of recently, I think they're going back to like a 4-4-2 this season where they've been playing like for most of the last 5 years. I think last year they went to a 3-5-2 for a lot of the season and won the league. So I don't really know why they've gone back from that. I don't know whether it's getting Suarez and the business they've did, which has made them go back to the 4-4-2, but doesn't seem to be as working as well as what it once did. But it will be what you expect from Atletico. They do give up possession and let you have it and try and hit you on the counter-attack with João Felix and Suarez and Griezmann if he plays and things like that. So I think this has got the I think it's got the potential to be one of the worst games of football you could see in the Champions League knockout stages, to be honest. Because it's two teams not playing particularly well.
One team that can't attack
well.
And the other team that can't defend.
Well, yeah, it could be mint. It could be like 4-3 or something. But also, I'm not expecting anything more than one goal in it, to be honest. But well, obviously, we'll have to wait and see what happens. But I can't see it being a thriller. And I can see Benfica versus Ajax on the other channel being a much better game. Yeah,
that'll be like a 3-3 thriller. To watch.
You don't fancy a Ronaldo last minute winner then by any chance, Marley? With whipping the shirt off, you know what Cristiano's about.
I could see that, but only after 92 minutes of absolute dross, to be honest. So yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if he did pop up with something just to remind Atletico that even though he's not in the same league anymore,
I think it'll be interesting.
He's still a pain in the ass for them.
I think it'll be interesting, to say the least. Whether it'll be a game for the purists, I'm not so sure. One side note, That is your one sue for the season, Joel. You're not allowed to do that ever again. And you've used it up already. And what are we, the 23rd of February? So from one striker to another, let's leave Ronaldo to one side and talk about someone who isn't travelling to Madrid. And that's Edinson Cavani. Hasn't played for ages, Joel. We talk about injuries and the fact that he was quite keen to leave the club last summer. He ended up staying for the rest of the season and he's out of contract again next summer. What is going on there with Edinson Cavani? The fans, seemingly to me, are getting a little bit frustrated about his lack of involvement.
Cavani seems to be picking and choosing when he can play at the moment. Half the time he spends still in Uruguay. He seems to get permission off Rangnick to actually, you know, extend his stay when he goes on international duty. But he seems to be a player who, if he feels the slightest niggle or the slightest knock, he'll rule himself out. I can't imagine what he would have been like under Mourinho, who was known to be a guy who, regardless of if you're injured or not, you would have started.
Do you not think that's strange, though? Because he seems the sort of character who would be well up for those kind of scraps in terms of the big games, like the Leeds game. It feels like he's the sort of guy that would relish playing in that kind of game. Going to Atletico Madrid, you know, returning to a European country and really kind of putting himself about it in the Champions League. That feels like the sort of game that Edinson Cavani would really want to get stuck into.
I thought that as well. And he does seem the type of guy where he wouldn't want to jeopardise the team's chances also. And I don't think he'd want to put himself out there if he doesn't feel he's 100%. I just hope that he's on a part-time contract because, honestly, that's what it feels like this season. I think he's only played about seven, eight games this season. And majority of the time, though, there have been games where after that he's gone to international duty and not returned for a good month. So it's a tricky one because last season he was the fans' favourite. He really got the club.
Yeah, he got
the club. He scored some huge goals in the season. And this season, I think his body's letting him down now. He's 35.
Yeah.
He's coming to the end of his contract with United. And I think now more than ever, and to be honest, even at Paris Saint-Germain, he wasn't a player who stayed fit a lot of the time. He did have injury troubles when he was there.
His goal record at PSG is frightening.
But I mean, whose isn't, though?
I mean, one thing I love about Cavani, right, everyone talks about him and, you know, the way he carries himself. He is 35. He turned 35 earlier this month on Valentine's Day. Of course it was poetic. Valentine's Day. Look at him. I think it's really interesting what you say about Edinson Cavani. I mean, I'm pretty certain that he'll be moving on from Old Trafford in the summer. It looks like a move back to Argentina is the angle that he might take. In terms of the Champions League tonight, then Atletico Madrid versus Manchester United in the Wanda Metropolitano, last 16, first leg. United are still on for the top four in the Premier League. But in terms of silverware, Joel, Marley mentioned it earlier on when it comes to Chelsea and what they're fighting for this season too. It's just the Champions League that you've got left. And we talk about some of the other teams in the competition. A couple of the other English teams are probably slightly better than Manchester United at the moment in terms of how good they are as a side. It's going to be some ask for Manchester United to get beyond the semi-finals even. If they can get a result tonight, that could put them in the quarterfinals. But Manchester United winning the Champions League, I don't want to laugh it off because anything's possible in football, but it feels like it's going to be a big, big task for that to happen.
I'll laugh it off.
I wouldn't. Well, the Champions League's thrown up some strange winners and finalists. I mean, you only have to look at, for example, Chelsea in 2012. Their squad was probably better than ours and played better than ours. But it's a season where I think we're going to go another season trophyless. I mean, when you look at the quality, if we were to come up against Liverpool or come up against Manchester City, even Bayern, Real Madrid, I wouldn't fancy us against any of them. And that's purely just because the team's still very, very disjointed. Despite the fact they're in a decent amount of form so far this season. But like, call me delusional.
Delusional. There you go.
But I don't know. For me, the Champions League is a different competition where it's all about how you play on the day. And sometimes you can get such fortune. We've seen it in so many different games where the most deserving team in the world has gone out. For example, you know, Barcelona against Chelsea in the semi-finals of the Champions League. This competition where, regardless of how good you are, it comes down to pretty much fortune and who's the better team on the day. And that's the only reason. I don't believe we'll win it, for sure. I think there's just too much quality in the teams over two legs. If it was a one-off game, potentially, I would say, you know, we might go further. But the fact that it's two legs, the next round will probably end up coming up against Bayern, Ajax, potentially, Chelsea, City. I don't fancy us against any of those teams because over two legs, we just don't have the quality.
What's a good result tonight then for Manchester United? What would you be happy with travelling back to Manchester from Madrid?
I was going to say 1-1, but away goals don't even count for
nothing anymore. No away goals in the Champions League now.
But obviously a victory is good, but I think even a draw I would fancy, as long as we don't come away with a loss, because at Old Trafford...
The form's not been as good at Old Trafford.
Yeah, Old Trafford, and it hasn't been for a long, long time, actually. Our away form's better, as we saw. We went on that, 29-game undefeated streak away from home. So I would, if we can come away from Madrid with a draw, I think every United fan will be pretty content, and I can see that happening, to be honest. I don't think Rangnick's going to overcommit tonight and allow Madrid to finish the tie, which I don't think they can do anyway, especially with our Cristiano Ronaldo.
Joel would take a 0-0. Marley thinks it's going to be 0-0.
So it's going to be 5-5.
So naturally, it's going to be loads of goals. Of course, we'll talk about that game on tomorrow's episode of Football Social Daily. We'll also discuss the three Premier League fixtures that take place tonight, as well as Arsenal taking on Wolves. That's tomorrow night, along with a couple of Europa League games as well. Loads going on, so make sure you hit subscribe, and that way you won't miss it. We are Football Social Daily. That's it from Joel, Marley and myself. We'll speak to you again tomorrow.
Football's Social Daily. Find more great sport at sport-social.co.uk.